It's the weekend, which means it's time for Jill on Money, the show that makes money fun and just happens to answer all your financial questions. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome back. It's hour number two of Jill on Money, and we've got something a little different for you this week in honor of March Madness and the craziness around college sports. We've got my friend Dana Jacobson, who works here at CBS. She's been at the network since 2013 after spending a decade at ESPN. And she's all over the place. She's fantastic on TV and radio. You see her on the sidelines, sometimes anchoring, all sorts of fun things. So I just love it. I love having Dana here. So Dana, you grew up in Michigan. Were you yourself an athlete?
I was. So I started swimming when I was about five. I was on the swim team. And I was always taller and bigger for my age. And so I was killing kids, you know, in this eight and under group. And I played everything. And I was the jock in the family. Good at any sport. Pick it up, I could play. Unfortunately, my older brother, not quite so athletically talented.
Yeah.
So his younger sister would beat him at everything. I'd be on the A basketball team and in the grade ahead. And he'd be on the D team where, hey, we're just going to let everybody play. So I grew up just loving playing any sport that I did. I was definitely that tomboy kind of girl who wanted to be like her older brother and wanted to sort of be with his friends. And then that led into all my other sports.
And did you play sports in college?
No. And in high school, I actually quit all my sports.
What?
I was going to act. I was going to win an Oscar. There was no doubt in my mind. This is what I love doing. And I remember freshman year of high school, it was sort of that choice between basketball practice and trying out for the play. And, it's funny because it seems like now they give kids that ability to do both. And then it was, no, you're going to have to be at practice or you're going to have to be here to rehearse the play.
Wow. Yeah. And what was the play?
Sound of Music. Sound of Music was the first
one.
Did
you get a part?
I did not get a part. How bad is this? Quit basketball, did not get a part, and did behind the scenes stuff. But from that went into forensics, which a lot of people don't know. You're basically acting, no costumes, no other people. You pick scenes. So I did a scene with one of my best friends, and we won third in states that year. So it sort of worked out. You're still acting. You're still crafting. But it was just something about acting that I loved, I guess. Pretending to be somebody else, getting into these characters. And I did all throughout high school, was always, at that point, did not make the first play, made everything from then on.
Okay.
So it was all right.
Let's go with some of your leading roles. What are some of your favorites?
I was a character actress. I was such a character actress. So in Our Town,
yeah.
I was Mrs. Gibbs. I was always the mom or the best friend. And then you know how high schools do these crazy, like, play you've never heard of.
Yes.
So we did Murder, She Wrote.
And as a play?
As a play. But it wasn't like...
Very good for...
Jessica kind of... It's not... We weren't going to Cabot Cove. It wasn't that. But it was like a play. People were putting on a play and there was a murder mystery behind it. And I was the crazy lady who was on the stage playing the character actress who was accused of the murder kind of thing. And then Titania in Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh, very
serious.
Was
my final role senior year. So,
uh-huh. So yeah. No musical theater once Sound of Music passed you by?
I had a decent voice, but not a good enough voice. This should have been my key that maybe this wasn't my direction, but I didn't quite pick up till I got into college.
Because if you gave me a song, we could sing it together. I want to come out right now and tell you that I am a musical theater lover.
I love it. Yeah.
And I didn't do it in high school. So I went the opposite
way
because I had to pick sports or theater.
Right.
And I picked sports. Also, by the way, pick sports, and that's why I didn't get bat mitzvahed, because I'm like, oh, conflicts with soccer. And my parents like, okay, how great is that?
I mean, that your parents allowed you is the amazing, that was never a choice. You were always going to Hebrew school. The musical theater thing was how I got bit early on. My next door neighbor had sung when she was younger, and she taught me the words to Annie when they were doing auditions for that. My mother would not let me go audition because she thought I would get crushed if I didn't get the part. But this next door neighbor taught me how to sing and taught me how to dance with it. I think you had to do, I don't even know if you did a song from the musical. I think you just did Happy Birthday to audition. And I was devastated that my mother would not let me go.
It was your own hard knock life.
It was
terrible.
Was.
Let's
awful.
Move on. You went to college, which is good because
that worked well.
It definitely is. It's better than not going to college. Although we have friends of the show who are not big fans of going to college. they think you should just go be an entrepreneur. Did you study communications? Mark's giggling in the background.
I know. Well, because actually that sort of thing, at college, when I knew what I wanted to do, so I get into college, I think I'm going to act. I go on my first audition and finally I realize I am not good enough to do this as a living. So what else have I ever liked doing? I really like asking questions. I like talking to people. I like that radio stuff that I played around with for a little while. The newspaper, I'm going to be Katie Couric. I've decided that's it. This was literally the first week of school. And I went and got an internship, and the news director said, just study what you love. Don't worry. Do your hands-on stuff here, and then study what you love. So I did English and communications, but it wasn't journalism. There was one news writing class. It was writing for newspapers, which anyone in television knows, entirely different. Switch your entire story around is basically what happens. So I just kind of followed my heart and did internships. Took art history classes, history of war, anything that interested me. And Michigan really gave me that.
History of war might be very good for football.
It is.
Possible.
Tacticians. Right. You learn about tacticians. The thing that I found with that, with all the variety of study, was that when I started writing leads, be it in sports, in news, it doesn't matter, I could bring from those other worlds. And I remember I would write these like Shakespearean leads for a sports story. And this is so basic, but just doing the whole Romeo and Juliet comparison to any team, to families that don't get along, to teams that don't get along. People were like, oh my God, that was so brilliant. Not really. I mean, that's great that you think that. I spent all of college studying this. I should be able to pull some of this out at times.
All right. So first job out of college was?
Assignment desk editor in Detroit at the then CBS station. I had interned there during college.
Radio or TV?
TV. Had interned there during college. Used to get up at 5 in the morning, drive in three mornings a week. And the woman who had been the assignment desk editor became the managing editor. She calls me in the middle of summer after I've graduated. No job. She tells my mother she wants to offer me a job. My mother accepted the job before I had it.
I love that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Very Jewish mother.
That's perfect.
You've been home long enough. You're going to take... But it was great. So I got to sit on the desk, did the overnights, had sort of done that already in the internship. And for people that don't know, you're kind of running the show, especially on the overnights. You're deciding stories. You're deciding directions. You're working your sources. So I learned so much. I learned how to tell a story just by sitting there. Worked my way up on the desk, went out with reporters because that's what I wanted to do, and then eventually got an on-air job a year later in tiny Traverse City, Michigan.
And then how long were you there?
I was there for 2 years, and that's where I switched into sports because for people who are sports fans, Scott Hansen of the Red Zone fame was our weekend sports anchor. Scott Hansen got a job in Champaign, Illinois, and you don't have contracts there, so literally Scott goes up to our news director, I'm leaving tomorrow, best of luck to you on the weekends, and it's like a Wednesday. My news director was an Indiana grad, and we had argued Big Ten football, Big Ten basketball, all of that. And he said, you want to anchor? You're going to do sports this weekend.
Oh.
So I had never really thought that I would go into sports. It was more that I love sports. It's a passion. But, you know, I didn't read box scores when I was a kid, and there were sports that I paid more attention to at times than others. And once I started doing it, there was just something different about the fun I could have, about my personality coming through, that it wasn't yet happening on the news side.
When we come back, more of our conversation with sportscaster extraordinaire Dana Jacobson. She's my pal from CBS. Stay tuned. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Annuities, IRAs, 401ks, she covers it all. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You ain't got nothing on me.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here, it's 855-411-JILL. You can send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. And by the way, if you've missed any part of the show, go to jillonmoney.com. Click on the radio tab, click down, boom, you'll see some shows, maybe this show or some previous shows. You can check it out. You can also check out our podcast, Better Off. You can get that on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, or anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts.
All right, let's get back to the interview with my pal, Dana Jacobson, the CBS Sports correspondent and CBS News anchor. So, Dana, what was it like covering all these men, these pretty massive men, and being a woman in the locker room?
I wasn't necessarily the first doing it, but I was the first in certain places. Like, the door had been opened, it wasn't locked, but it was sometimes tough to push in. You know, Sacramento was my next job from Traverse City, so it's a top 20 market. And I'd gone on some different interviews before that, and I always think this is interesting. I'd gone to Tulsa the week before my interview there. And in Tulsa, the news director, the assistant news director, we love you, you're great. We got like 700 tapes. Yours stood out. This was great. You're wonderful. Assistant news director's dropping me off at the airport. You're definitely the best candidate. I don't think Tulsa's ready for a woman to be doing sports. Now, this is, I'm going to date myself a little, but it's 96 at this point. This is not 86, right. 76. This is 1996.
20 years ago.
Okay. All right. So I go to Sacramento, and the only woman who had ever been doing sports on air had been a Playboy bunny.
Which is awesome.
It's wonderful. I will say at the time, I could not have been further from the Playboy bunny look. I was about 100 pounds heavier than I am now. I had Rosie O'Donnell comparisons when they used to do these. So, and I, no offense to Rosie, I just was not that kind of look. And they didn't care. The news director there was like, you were by far the writing, your on-air presence, all of it above everyone else. And they didn't hesitate to give me the job, which was great. But then I was the first. First woman in that Sacramento Kings locker room on a regular basis. You'd go to San Francisco and there'd be a few. There were probably like three or four women that were writers in the Bay Area that mm-hmm. you'd see. But I remember that first time walking into the NBA locker room and thinking, okay, just you're here to do a job. You're here to do a job. You hear somebody shout out, woman on the floor, which I sort of laugh at now. They never do because it's so common. And I did my job. I realized right away they were going to remember me because I was the only woman. And if I did my job well, it turned out they did respect me, and that really worked to my advantage.
Do you feel like it was harder for you to win their respect, but once you did, it was easier to maintain it?
I think it was harder for them to almost want to respect me, to pay attention other than, oh, she's the woman. I'll always say this. I think I had an opportunity in Sacramento, not just because I was good. I think they loved the idea. I think that news director loved the idea of putting a woman on the air. That worked to my advantage. But then it didn't matter to viewers and to the players. I had to be good enough. I noticed over the time there, I was there for 6 years. After a while, what you're asking, I don't think factored in. Mm-hmm. I think then it was there were more women doing it, so people just got used to it. But I do think in the beginning it took me a little longer. You couldn't be buddies with the players the way guys were. Mm. You could talk to them and develop a relationship, but it was, you didn't want them to want your number. And if they didn't want your number, why were they talking to you? Was sort of the mindset of some of them.
Was there a sorority of female sports reporters who nurtured one another?
Not really. And part of it was there weren't any there. Right before I left, the other two major stations brought in women. And I think we tried to help each other out. At ESPN, obviously, there are a ton. And there were some women that were incredibly supportive. And then there were others where there are five jobs. We know that only one's going to go to a woman. And some people had an sort of that attitude of, I'm just here for myself. Good luck to you. Not everyone, and not even cutthroat. More of just, I'm going to keep to myself.
That's so interesting. So I was, similarly, my very first job on Wall Street, I was a trader on the floor of the Commodities Exchange. There were 800 members and there were eight female members. And I remember thinking that there was one woman who I was very friendly with.
Right.
And there was a feeling among a lot of the other ones, which was almost like, I did it. I'm not doing it for you. And I remember my dad was a trader. And I remember saying to my father, like, I think the women would be nicer. He's like, why would you think that?
Right.
He's
right.
Like, they're all out for themselves. They're traitors. They want to slit your throat to make money.
And I think it's a shame because you think it would be powerful to bond together and sort of work together. And those are the people that know your stories. They're living it too. I just think you fall in that in-between time and you really are clawing it out to try to have that one opportunity. So it definitely works against sort of that bonding experience.
So you get the call, you go to ESPN, Bristol, Connecticut, which is like silly that they had they're out there, just, but whatever. Like, but I mean, I don't understand that. I don't understand that they're still there.
I mean,
there.
You know why? Well, because they started there and it grew so fast, and to go anywhere else was too much money. They flirted with San Diego, they flirted with Orlando. And by the way, just having gone back there about a month ago, it was a junior college campus when I left. It's just a college campus now. And I get it. They can't build that anywhere else for the cost. But man, that's a long way from
Midtown Manhattan.
Yes, yes.
What sport did you like covering the most? And what do you like covering the most?
I flip-flopped a lot. So because I was in Sacramento, the Kings got good under my watch. They were horrible. They got good. I loved the NBA then. And I had always sort of been maybe at that point mostly a basketball girl. Loved covering the NBA and got to do so many feature stories and got to know people. When I got to ESPN, because you literally must know everything, do everything, hockey, baseball, lacrosse. Okay, we're getting into NASCAR. Everybody learned NASCAR. You know, that's the environment. I switched at some point, I feel like the world did, more to the NFL because I had a few more opportunities there. Mm. I also really got into the X Games. I did what was SportsCenter for the X Games, so it was called X Center. I have never had more respect for athletes than some of these young athletes. Everybody thinks, oh, they're stoners, they're not. They are athletes. I don't know how many of them are getting high, but I also don't know how many NFL players are getting high. So, you know, like that part, I think everybody should just probably put aside. They are doing more with less, are more innovative, are putting their bodies, this is what worries me, at incredible risk. Mm. You know, we talk about concussions in the NFL and sports and in soccer even. They don't talk about it as much in X Games athletes. And I think that's probably a real concern for them. But in trying to do anything baseline that they do, it's so difficult that that's where the respect grew and had a lot of fun doing it.
What don't you like covering? Tell the truth. Hardly anyone's listening, except there are hundreds of thousands of listeners.
My least favorite to cover, and I get killed for this all the time, is baseball. It's being at a game is one thing. Covering it from afar is something
different. Is that
because
you're a Detroit Tigers fan?
No. I mean, I should love them more.
I mean,
they've actually had
success. But as a child, they were crappy, right?
No, I had a World Series. And my bat mitzvah was right around the World Series. It was a big deal. Like, were they going to win? Or were people not going to, they're just going to watch the game during my bat mitzvah? Missy had her bat mitzvah on one of the World Series games. Oh. It was horrible.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. No, I had good Tigers play. I had great Pistons play. Mm-hmm. The bane of my existence, and the Red Wings, of course, the bane of my existence are the Lions, which are my, please, dear God, in my lifetime, let them win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, I'm a Jets fan, so let's leave it at that.
Well, you have a Super Bowl. We don't. That's what I keep saying.
Yeah, that was like, yeah.
I know, I was before, I know, but it's there.
Okay. What about if you get sent out to do like Olympics? What about curling? Like, would you be, because to me, that's like sweeping on the ice, which I think is totally funny and an obsessive compulsive way. I love it. But is that a sport?
It is, according to the Olympic Committee. You know, here's my thing with the X Games taught me. I'd known nothing really about the sports within when they said, do you want to go do this thing, X Center? Sure, why not? I realized, like, you can develop a fondness and an appreciation for every sport, whether you think it's a sport or not. Curling to me is kind of like the bowling thing. Why does it fall into sport? There's a certain amount of athleticism. Darts, same kind. Like, I guess there's some athleticism to it in how you have to use your body and muscle control.
All right. Gotta go pay some bills. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back with more of our interview with Dana Jacobson.
Young, old, it doesn't matter. She's here to help you. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. When I think
of heaven. You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger, and I am delighted that you're joining us today. And it is the middle of March Madness, and I love sports myself, and I'm an aging athlete. So I thought it'd be fun to bring on someone who does this for a living. It's my friend Dana Jacobson, who is at CBS with me now.
And, you know, it's so interesting because, Dana, you spent a decade at ESPN. So what has the transition been like moving from a sports network, that's all they do, to a news organization like CBS?
You know, it's been interesting. It's funny because it's like coming full circle in my life of what I wanted to do and getting to do. It's looking at sports differently. When I do sports for the news side, it's remembering it's the casual fan, but it's the part that I love. I love storytelling. I love, anybody can do a game story. You can go out and cover a game. Can you find the story within the game? Can you find the interesting fact about the player, something nobody knows? I love that part, and that's what I get to do. And then to branch out and not just do sports, it makes the sports better.
That's so cool.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Let's go back a little bit and talk about college football, because this is like one of the things we talked about very briefly in the green room, because I said, you know, I think we should pay college athletes in some way. I'm not sure how. Tell me about how you have either – you came to the idea of college football and what you have now learned since covering it, and whether I'm crazy for thinking we should pay them.
No, and I said to you right away, totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. I really do believe that they should pay athletes. It scares me that you can't figure it out because you're the financial mind, so you're the people that I'm depending on to say,
well,
we've figured it out.
Well, here's my idea. I think that every single collegiate athlete, because the problem is that I hear about, I played sports in colleges, and I experienced it.
And you were a non-revenue sport.
I was a non-revenue sport at an Ivy League school, so there's no revenue there anyway,
right,
but generally speaking. And so the idea has always been, well, you know, the whole problem with Title IX is that we actually have to cut programs that are this, and if we start having to pay athletes, we're going to have a problem with that. I think that every college athlete should have some sort of let's call it a baseline income that everyone is paid. It's a small amount. It doesn't have to be huge.
Right.
But because you are getting income, then you can have the school make a retirement plan contribution on your behalf, which you can't touch till you're 59
right,
and a half unless
right.
you get these massive penalties. And in fact, maybe it's even like a locked pension plan that you really can't get ever
okay.
until you're 59 and a half. And that way we can sort of pay everyone a baseline and we can give people some retirement. And it's like a nice little benefit. And I
something.
Something.
I love that. That's sort of the way when I try to put my head around it, what I think. So I looked this up knowing I was coming in. They always say, we don't have the money for it. We don't have the money for it. Okay. In 2013-14, profit in college athletics on those revenue sports was almost $1.5 billion.
Come on.
Dollars. So you're going to have to throw away the we don't. I understand. You have a bulk of schools that actually make that money.
Yeah.
And it is the revenue sports. I actually am going to be even harder than you are. I would be okay with, well, let's start with the revenue generating sports. Let's just, and by the way, by that I mean at UConn, women's basketball is a revenue generating sport.
Right.
If you are generating revenue at a school, we put you in this pool. Each university has to contribute whatever percentage of their profits. So yes, Alabama, Michigan, they're going to pay more.
Right.
And then it's divided equally among those athletes that are playing in revenue-generating sports. And I'm like you. I don't necessarily think it should be, hey, here's $100 a month. There's got to be some way. I'm more concerned after.
Yeah.
How do they profit? And as you're talking about and putting it, I hadn't even really thought about this, and putting it into some type of retirement, you actually are going to make money off of that. You're
right.
going to make money. You haven't thought about it. You're pissed off that you didn't get it right away.
Right.
But guess what? It's like me going, Dad, why do I have to put this money away? You won't miss it. You won't. And when I look at that now, I am thrilled that I know I will have that money no matter what. I think the question is, how much can they do? They did change this rule now where they get about $5,000 a year. It varies from each school, and this is all athletes, to cover those costs. This was the complaint after UConn won the basketball championship, and they were like, we can't eat at night. We're hungry. So they do get extra money to try to cover some of those costs. So I think it's a mix for people who say, well, they're getting an education and that should be enough. But it's not, because they are making these schools so much money and they are raising the prestige level.
Right. Schools. It's obscene.
Why wouldn't you want to give them some benefit for that beyond the education? Because we do need to accept that for some of them, that education is not enough. Because if I'm a football player and I know I have an NFL future and I go play, I am risking that chance of injury of not having that NFL future. Granted, these are boy bodies versus man bodies. They're not ready to go into the NFL yet, but I understand that desire of these athletes to share in some of what they are generating right now.
Yeah, it's obscene, it's disgusting, and so I have a hard time with it. And the NCAA is like so full of crap, it's unbelievable.
Well, they are very old school in every belief they have. When they make a right decision, I'm more shocked than anything. You know, they had a kid about 23 years old, had served overseas in the Army, came to Oakland to play basketball. Wasn't a phenomenal basketball player. The coach had seen him at an event and just thought, he's going to be a great leader for my team. I want my young kids around this guy who served overseas and saved his buddies and did all this. Oh, well, you're going to have to sit for a year because you're transferring into the school. Are you kidding? This guy has saved lives over in Afghanistan. I'm pretty sure he's going to be okay with the course load.
Yeah.
And after some pressure, they reverse their ruling. And I always sit there and say, oh my gosh, the NCAA did something right. Yay.
You're a big social media queen, right?
Relatively, yes.
At Dana Jacobson.
Yes.
Jacob's son.
Son of Jacob. It's the Jewish version, right. Not the Swedish version that you see on the PGA Tour.
Okay.
S-E-N.
Yeah, that's very disappointing for Jewish girls who are like, he's Jewish. Oh, no, he's not, actually. At Dana Jacobson, what is what's the best part about having a Twitter following and the worst part?
Best part is getting love on a bad day. And you shouldn't do it, but you know, if you do a story or something and you're just having a bad day and these random people who don't know you write something nice, or even just doing your job regularly, I'm amazed somebody took the time out to say something, and it's nice to hear. Now, the problem is the exact opposite of that.
Like, I didn't like your hair.
Yeah. Yeah, you look fat. Oh, your hair is awful.
Okay, thank you to Miss Dana Jacobson, CBS sportscaster anchor extraordinaire, for joining us. When we come back to Jill on Money, we're going to take some of your questions. And if you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger. Want to get in touch? Call or email any day, anytime. 855-411-JILL or ask Jill at jillonmoney.com.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. And if you have a financial question, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number here is 855-411-JILL. Our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Follow us on Twitter @JillOnMoney. If you miss any part of this show, and I know we're now deep into the second hour, maybe you just turned on the radio, you can go to our website, jillonmoney.com, click on the radio tab. Mark has kindly been able to post all of our shows. And so, you know, you can go back and listen to it. After the fact, of course, but that's kind of cool. Don't forget to check out our new podcast. It's called Better Off. You can get it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts. What do you use, Mark? You use Stitcher? Oh, you use iTunes? Oh, you're so old school. I pay for my app, Casts, because there's all sorts of things that you can do with it. Because I don't know, I don't want to necessarily have to support the biggest behemoth. It's like how I like to go to my local bookstore and often buy a book there versus Amazon, because I want to sort of spread the wealth. I don't know. That's kind of how I am. Also, remember we had all those problems with the iTunes store anyway, and they were particularly unhelpful in that process. So anyway, I have this great app. It's called Casts, Cast with an S on it. But you can also, there's another one called Instacast that's kind of cool too. Anyway, go check it out. Better Off, the new podcast. Sure, go to the iTunes store. Well, you know, if you want to do that, it's fine. Okay, that's all. All right, let us do an email because we love hearing from you. Hey, this is from a work colleague of mine, who says he's been listening to the podcast every week, and he says, I'd love for you to address this in more detail when you talk about passive investing. Remember, passive versus active. Passive is basically you're saying, I'm going to just buy a static
fixed basket of stuff, like an index fund, and I'm going to let it do its thing. And I'm not going to pay a manager 1% or 1.5% in order for us to, you know, try to beat that index, the market. Okay, so the question is from Matt. I'm all for investing in passive index funds. My 401k has funds in the BlackRock S&P 500 index, also in the LifePath Index 2040. That's a target date fund. So then he gives me the 5-year return for each. LifePath 2040, 8.3%. BlackRock S&P 500, 5-year index, 14%. So he says the BlackRock index vastly outperforming the LifePath for 1, 3 year, et cetera. So when you talk on the podcast about putting money in an index fund and letting it sit, are you saying my entire 401k should be in the BlackRock index? If I want to be super aggressive, rather than allocating some to an age-targeted fund, I figured the LifePath would be more aggressive because it's targeting 2040, but it's wimpy compared to the S&P 500 index. All right, so if you look at these LifePath funds, okay, if you look at any target date fund, what you're really seeing is that some of the money is in probably an index, some of the money is in a stock index, and some of it is in a bond index, and some of it is in this strange other category. So, for example, if I pull up the BlackRock 2040 index, and I'm going to pull up the institutional share. I'm not sure if that's the case. I'm pretty sure that that's what you get when you're buying a fund inside your 401k. But here's what I wanted to do. I wanted to say, okay, it says asset class. It says multi-asset. Then I click through and I'm like, let me see what this portfolio looks like, right? And it's mostly a U.S.-based fund, right? And if I look at what it has inside of it, it has a broad-based index fund, Russell 1000, a international exposure, some real estate exposure. But then it also has some bond stuff in here, right? So it has about 8% in bonds. So what does that mean? Depending on how much money you have in your plan, Matt, what I think I would do is, you know, I probably would say, yeah, you know, if you wanted to just be all U.S., that's one thing. But, you know, maybe what you do is you pick in your fund, in your 401k fund, you say, okay, well, you know, let me put in 50 or 60% in the S&P 500 index, then maybe another 20% in a mid-cap index, maybe 10% in an international index. But that's why you're seeing a differential between the 2040 fund, not just because of the bond exposure, which you would, you know, again, I would never say 100% in stocks, but also because this fund is investing outside of the U.S. And it just so happens in the last couple of years that a lot of the U.S. markets have dominated other, especially emerging markets. So what I think you might want to do is, if you, you know, do you need to have it all in the S&P 500? No. But if you're going to allocate it yourself, what I would say is make some of it the stock. Some, you should have international exposure and you should have bond exposure. So thank you so much for writing. And you are listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Tony from San Diego writes that he's in his mid-40s and he contributes to a Roth IRA. He has contributed to a Roth IRA for many years, but he also has non-tax sheltered investment with Betterment, the robo-advisor. And he also contributes to his 401k at work. He says, however, my income now is too high for Roth IRA contributions, but my employer offers a Roth 401k option. Does it make sense to direct some percentage of my 401k contributions to the Roth, even though my income in retirement will be less than it is now? How useful will it be in retirement to have a significant amount in each of these baskets, buckets of money, 401k, Roth 401k, non-tax sheltered? I like having some money that's already been taxed. And again, I don't have all of your information, Tony, but generally speaking, I like the idea that you don't have all the money that's in tax deferred, because remember, when you take that tax deferred money out, that adds to your total income. And so while your tax bracket may be lower in retirement, it may go up because you have to take those mandatory distributions. You're absolutely right that even though you are prevented now from using a Roth IRA, there is no income limit to a Roth 401k. So I would use it. I would totally use it. And if you're asking me about like what percentage, I think it would be kind of great to have, say, I don't know, let's say 20%. I'm making these numbers up. This is literally, I haven't really thought this through, but I'm going to say it because it seems about right to me. Let's say you have 20% in non-tax sheltered. And with the remaining 80%, you can't catch up enough. You know, you do your best to kind of equalize between a 401k and a Roth 401k. I think that would be kind of cool. So if it were 40, 40, 20, I think that would be pretty great. 40% in tax deferred, 40% in already taxed, and then 20% in non-tax sheltered. Hope that helps. Thanks for writing, Tony. And thanks for listening. This has been a great program. If you've got a financial question, we always want to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Don't forget to check out our new podcast, Better Off, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.